You're listening to the Ambit Energy Podcast with field recognition specialist Wayne McMullen. And welcome to the latest and greatest episode of the Ambit Energy Podcast. Well, today we are once again taking a stroll down memory lane as we hear Chris Chambliss' speech at Ambition 2008. Enjoy.
So much has happened since we came together to celebrate our first Ambit anniversary. In many ways, 2008 has been a remarkable year for the company, one full of incredible accomplishments. We've had record growth in customers and consultants and revenue and every other metric that you might use to judge the success of a business. And in other ways, it's been a very challenging year. We had obstacles to our Illinois launch. We had an extremely volatile gas market that caused electricity rates to skyrocket. We had record heat. And for the first time since we began operations, we faced the technical challenges that inevitably are created by rapid growth. And it's been that same kind of year for me personally, remarkable and challenging. And through it, I learned a lot about our business, and I learned even more about myself. And I want to take this opportunity this afternoon to share with you what I learned, because I think that any time that you're part of something as special as Ambit, when you've invested so much personally in the way of your time and your energy, your business and your personal life are inevitably going to get intertwined. And sometimes it's hard to tell which accomplishments and which challenges are personal and which ones are business. In fact, I'm not sure it matters, because most of what we're working for in this business is so personal that it really becomes the same thing, doesn't it? Since he was a little boy, my brother has suffered from a rare genetic illness. He has a metabolic disorder that impairs his body's ability to turn food into energy. And I learned earlier this year that I have the same condition. Kind of ironic for the co-founder of an energy company, huh? The good news is my condition is not life-threatening if I take the proper precautions. The frustrating thing is there's no cure. So I'm having to learn to be very vigilant with my diet and my exercise. I found out about my condition after returning from a 20-mile canoe trip on the Brazos River earlier this year with my good friend and our chief information officer, John Burke. I'm trying to turn him into a redneck. Looking back on it now, our trip in many ways, for me anyway, was a great metaphor for Ambit Energy in 2008. And so if you'll bear with me for a minute, I'd like to tell you the story, because I think there's several parallels for you in your own business that you'll find meaningful. It began, as most trips do, with a lot of planning. John and I had been looking forward to going camping since the beginning of the year and had started getting ready for it as early as January. As you can imagine, when we finally left 4 months later in April, Becky and Leslie were more than ready for us to leave. And yes, ladies, for you that are counting, that's 4 months of planning for a two-day trip. I told you they were ready for us to leave. So, now for those of you who are from out of state or who've never been to the upper Brazos area in Texas, you've got to understand this is a very remote part of Texas. It's very wild and hot, even in April, and there's no potable water, so everything you need for the trip, you have to take in with you. It's a perfect guy trip, full of the promise of adventure and excitement and the unknown. And so we left at 4:30 on a Thursday morning and drove out to Rochelle's canoe rental, where we would be taken up just below the dam at Possum Kingdom Lake and dropped off on the river below the spillway. I call this the euphoria phase of our trip. Everything was going exactly according to plan. We got all of our gear packed without incident. The weather was spectacular. John and I were in great spirits. There was no traffic on the drive up, and we got to Rochelle's at around 6 o'clock that morning, and the owner helped us transfer all our gear into his trucks, and along with two canoes, we took the 30-minute drive up to the river. Now, the owner, he's a great guy. He's very helpful, and he could tell from helping us load up that we were, you know, well prepared, obviously. So instead of worrying about all the stuff he normally might, he was just able to talk to us on the ride up about what we could expect on our trip. And He said encouraging things like, you picked a good time to come. Most of the big snakes are still asleep. The really big ones won't come out until all the flash flooding is over. Or how about this one? Don't worry about wading in the shallow parts. We haven't had anyone get sucked down by quicksand in several years. Kidding. And there's my personal favorite. I wouldn't really call the Brazos a wilderness area. We haven't had a cougar mauling since Clinton was president. You know, helpful stuff like that. Now, did I forget to mention this is a 20-mile canoe trip? And did I mention the only way to get back to your car once you start is to go down the river 20 miles? Are you with me? There are no phone booths along the way where you can call a cab to come get you if something goes wrong, and cell phones do not work in the Upper Brazos. It's just you and your canoe. And all this dawned on me about the time I was sliding mine into the water, and I heard our new friend say, "See you boys in a couple of days." So he pulled his truck out on the highway and disappeared. And I call this the reality phase of our trip. Didn't last long, though. No, we moved very quickly from there into the difficulty phase. In case you're interested, you know you're entering the difficulty phase of your trip when you realize that even though you are supposed to be floating leisurely downstream, the wind is blowing you back upstream. This phase lasted for about 10 miles, or as I like to call it, the rest of day one. Now, thankfully, we made it to a great campsite by about 5 o'clock that afternoon, and again, for those of you who are counting, that is 11 hours of paddling. Or for you athletes out there, that's less than 1 mile per hour. And by the way, did you know that if the wind blows the front of your canoe to the left or the right, there is virtually zero chance that you can straighten that up by paddling harder? Doesn't work that way. I'm fairly certain that the word canoe is an Indian word that means instrument of torture. I haven't verified that yet, but I'm pretty sure that's what it means. We finally get to our first campsite, and we get our tent set up and our gear unloaded from the canoes, and we stack them up around the camp, and we get a big fire going, and then John and I are just relaxing for a few minutes, enjoying being outside, and we just decide to sit there and watch the sunset, you know, before we cook dinner. After a few minutes, John looks over at me and says, "What's that?" And he points to this big yellow wad of material next to the tent. I looked at him, I said, "That's the rain tarp." Now, this is our CIO, right? He's very analytical. He said, "Well, don't you think we should put it over the tent?" Well, I looked up at the sky, and it's magnificent blue, not a cloud anywhere. And I thought about it for a minute, and I said, "No, I think it looks fine outside." Anybody see where this is going? Guys, just a few minutes later, I noticed that the birds had stopped chirping. And everything was kind of eerily still, and I couldn't figure out why. Now, remember, we're in a canyon, and we're on a bend in a river, and so you can't really see what's going on ahead of you or behind you. All we could hear was this moaning sound starting to build like a whistle. And then all of a sudden, the wind, it started to pick up, and there was dust everywhere. And in the next few minutes, those same blue skies that I'd been counting on for a peaceful night's sleep were as dark as dusk, and three funnel clouds, like the ones that you see in the news, were headed right for us. Now, by this point, the wind's blowing so hard and so loud we can barely hear anything, and everything in our camp that wasn't secured has already been blown away, which we couldn't really see happen, what for the pouring rain and golf ball-sized hail that is now pelting us all over. At which point, I think we both realized that we were standing under some fairly big trees trying to minimize the beating we were taking from the hail, and that might not be such a great idea considering the fact that lightning's now just striking all around us. And so I look over at John, who's from New York and who I know probably has never seen a tornado, and I can read his lips. He's saying, "What do you do when you're outside in a tornado?" And he's looking at me like, "You're from Texas, you're supposed to know this stuff." And all I'm thinking at this point is, "God, please don't let this lightning wake up the big snakes." And that's when a tree that was near where I was standing got pushed to the ground by one of these twisters on its way through our campsite. And then as soon as it came, it was over. And obviously, we had entered at that point the perfect storm phase of the trip. Now, there you go. Scariest thing I've ever been through. Luckily, we made it through all this stuff without serious injury, but everything we brought with us that wasn't blown away was soaking wet. And we had to cook dinner wet, and we had to sit there and eat it wet, and we had to clean the dishes wet, and even worse, we had to sleep wet. And it was a pretty miserable night, and I'm skipping the whole raccoon attack story because I don't have enough time. So, they think I'm kidding, John. Little did we know that that night, in only a few short hours, we would actually look back fondly on the memory of being cold and wet. That's because day two would usher in what I call the desert wilderness phase of our trip. Now, it started innocently enough with a bright sunny morning. It dried out all our gear, in fact, and it actually put us in a pretty chipper mood, considering that we had spent all night soaking wet. And so after a big breakfast, John made eggs, and for some reason he took a picture of them, so I thought I'd share that with you too, so it wasn't all for nothing. We packed all our now dry gear into the instruments of torture, and we set out on the river. Day two was looking up. But by the fourth or fifth mile of paddling up the downstream, the 100-degree weather just really started to take its toll on me. In fact, it became a real struggle. A struggle that I hadn't anticipated or expected, and I wasn't prepared for it. Now, it was just relentless, and there wasn't anywhere to go to avoid it. And by the time we got to camp that afternoon, I was out of gas. And after a pretty rough night the next morning, I entered what I call the decision phase of the trip. Guys, that's the moment I realized I had to decide whether or not I was going to quit. That's when I realized that making it through the rest of the trip was going to require something from me, something deep inside that I had to draw on to get through it. Now, I didn't know at the time that my body was not properly turning my calories into the energy I needed, or that the increased physical exertion from all the paddling was driving me into a metabolic crisis. All I knew was that something wasn't normal and I was in real trouble. And in that weakened moment, I was overwhelmed with complete fear and doubt. What if I can't do this? What if it gets worse? What if this? What if that? And that's when I realized I couldn't quit. Even if I wanted to, I couldn't quit. Quitting meant a good chance that I might not get where I wanted to be most, which at that moment was home with Leslie. And so I had to make the decision to get up and keep going. Now, thankfully, John was there to help me. If it hadn't been for him, I don't know if I could have gotten my canoe loaded that third morning. But once I was in the water, I kept looking at my map of the river and that Highway 4 bridge that marked mile 20 and the parking lot at Rochelle's. And I just kept paddling and looking for that bridge around every turn. And that last morning, it was the toughest of the whole trip. The fact that I had decided to keep going didn't make it any easier, by the way. In fact, it got harder. And I was in pretty bad shape. And the thing about this condition that I'm finding is that when you're in a metabolic crisis, the best thing you can do is eat something and then be still and rest. And I couldn't rest. I had to keep paddling. So at this point, I'm just gutting this thing out. And I'm paddling and resting. And I'm paddling and resting. And I'm just trying to make small increments of progress. And then to top it all off, the water, we had to bring the water in with us, and the water that I had with me was starting to run low. And since I didn't know how far exactly I had to go, I was rationing it as best I could, and that only made it harder to keep going. Then something fantastic happened. The wind completely shifted directions. And it wasn't blowing against me anymore. It was behind me. It was pushing me. At that critical moment where I am convinced that I had taken things as far as I could take them, the river actually began to carry me. And then what seemed like only a few minutes later, out of nowhere, there it was, the Highway 4 bridge, victory phase. And from somewhere deep and unexpected, my strength was suddenly renewed. And I was able to keep paddling until I got to the docking point and it was over. And you know, 2008's been that same kind of year for Ambit. We started the year full of promise and excitement. And then our delay in Illinois moved us from the euphoria phase to the difficulty phase. And then while we were paddling through that, out of nowhere, the cost of natural gas began to rise to record levels and the perfect storm phase kicked in. And about the time we figured out how to deal with the storm, a record heat wave hit across the country, and we were in full desert wilderness phase before we even knew it. And I think by late July, most of us at the corporate office were just worn out. And I know so were many of you. It was a rough summer. Guess what? Whether we wanted to or not, we came to the decision phase at Ambit. And we had to decide if what we wanted most was still enough to motivate us to keep going, or if we were going to give in. Now, I hope this week has shown you what we decided. Can you relate to that in your own business? You know, I know you can because I know many of you personally, and I pay attention to what's happening in your lives and in your businesses. And some of you are brand new in this business, and you're enjoying that euphoria phase that makes you feel like you can do anything and that cannot last. That will soon be replaced by the reality phase of this business where you realize for the first time that you're in a fight for financial independence and that it won't be easy. And some of you are there already. Take heart. It won't be easy, but it will be worth it. And then there are those of you who are in the difficulty phase, and you're struggling against that steady current of setbacks and rejection and all the resistance that comes so quickly and so hard against progress. And then there are some of you in a desert wilderness or a perfect storm right now who think that maybe you've made a mistake and that you're not cut out for this at all, that you're crazy to even think you ever were. Fear and doubt are setting in, telling you to quit, telling you that what you want most is impossible to have. Don't believe it. Don't believe it. When things are hardest, hope is closest. And while some of you are already there, you will all eventually come to the same place in this business. And that's the decision phase. And you're going to have to decide if what you're fighting for is even worth the fight. Let me encourage you, it is. It is. Guys, there's something sinister in this world that hates progress. Hates any kind of progress, especially progress towards a personal dream or a goal. There's something that stands against it, that would see it stopped at any cost, that would rob us of our breakthroughs and pull our victories out from under us, that would paralyze us with fear and steal our hope for freedom. And yet it's in this struggle where we find our strength. And it's in this testing where we find out who we really are. And this is where we learn that we'll always have to fight hardest for the thing that we want the most. And it's here that we remember something that we've always known, but we can't remember ever learning. That on the other side of every fight is a promise fulfilled. And for me this year, it took an extreme physical testing to show me that I needed help for a condition that's been holding me back for years. For Ambit, it took a series of perfectly timed crises to show us where we could stand improvement. So as this company continues to grow bigger and expand this opportunity further, as we most certainly will, we won't stumble and trip like those other companies who've never been tested at all. As I said earlier, I learned a lot about our business this year and about myself, and they turned out to be the same lessons. And so I want to close by sharing 10 of those with you. And I hope they meet you where you're at, and that by applying them, you and your Ambit business will grow stronger. First, Don't start anything that you aren't committed to finish. And once you're in the water, paddle like your life depends on it. It does. The second thing I learned, bring good company with you. You know, there's nothing more important in the world than surrounding yourself with positive people who love you and who support what you're trying to do. Good friends and good partners are invaluable. Third lesson, when the wind is against you, don't fight it. It won't last long, and you'll only wear yourself out. Just keep your canoe pointed straight and stay positive. Fourth lesson, prepare for rain even when there are no clouds. Said another way, work hard when you feel like it so you won't have to when you don't. Fifth lesson, don't get so focused on where you're going that you forget and miss the scenery. Enjoy the trip. Enjoy the trip. Number six, rest if you need to, but rest moving forward. Do less if you have to, but don't do nothing. Learn how to have a productive day off. Number seven, you got to maintain a long-term perspective. Don't measure your progress in this business in minutes. Measure it in miles. Number eight, you're so much stronger than you think you are. Dig deep. Dig deep. Remember what you're working for. Number nine, the most important step in your success is not your first step or your final step. It's your next step. Keep paddling. Keep paddling. And finally, the wind and the current will eventually turn back in your favor. So never give up and never quit. Guys, it's a brave thing to reach for your dreams, to throw yourself with reckless abandon into a place that you've never been. But then nothing great has ever been accomplished without great effort and great resolve. And yet it all starts with the decision. Now, I try to have a quiet time every morning, and I don't always succeed. I do try, and I also admit that starting Ambit has affected my success rate in that area. But yesterday I was able to have one, and when I do, I like to read the Bible. And I'm reading Jeremiah right now. My starting place for yesterday had something that I think perfectly fits what I'm trying to say, so I added it to my speech, and I want to read it to you. This is what the Lord says. Stand at the crossroads and look for the ancient paths. Ask where the good way is, and then walk in it, and you'll find rest for your souls. Ladies and gentlemen, the good way is not a life of stress and doubt and paralysis, living in bondage to debt and uncertainty. The good way is the way of freedom and a future without fear. Ladies and gentlemen, this is your dream that I'm talking about. It's your family that we're fighting for. It's your breakthrough that is waiting for you. It's your promise of victory on the other side of the fight. Can you stand on your feet for your breakthrough? Can you get excited about your victory that's on the way? Are you willing to make the decision this afternoon to commit to your business like never before? Are you? Are you sure? Then the victory's already yours. And it's just a matter of time before you reach that phase. May God bless each one of you in the remainder of 2008. And may He transform your business in 2009 by bringing you breakthroughs and victories greater than you could ever hope or imagine. And most of all, May he show you where the good way is, a way where you will gain a life of freedom and a future without fear. Thank you, guys, and God bless you.
Thank you. Another great speech from your co-founder and chief marketing officer, Chris Chambliss. 2008 was a great ambition, as are all of our events. So don't forget to register for Simulcast 2015. Just follow the instructions at events.amberenergy.com to participate in our kickoff of the new year on January 24th. As always, we ask that you share this podcast with your team members. Want to listen to more podcasts? Well, just go to ambersuccess.com and you'll find a complete archive of all our podcasts in the news section. Or subscribe to us on iTunes so you never miss an episode. I'm Wayne McMullen for Ambit Field Recognition, and you've been listening to the Ambit Energy Podcast. Work hard, dream big, and I'll see you soon. Take care, guys.